to give a talk, and I was going to aim to try to finish today at 8:45, so that we can. It takes a while for us to kind of leave in an orderly way, the way we do. And so I thought that just so that people who have to come in here at 9 feel like they can come in and get their meal and stuff. So what's been on my mind for today is the subject of faith. And we're in, the tradition of meditation that we're part of is sometimes called in English the insight meditation practice. And insight is a very important element of what we're developing, is developing insight. And a lot of Westerners are a little bit allergic to the notions of faith, but are very keen on the idea of insight or wisdom or understanding. However, when the Buddha talked about the development or the maturation of a strong meditation practice or strong mindfulness practice, he very clearly paired faith with wisdom or with insight. And that he said you need to have both together, balancing each other. That if there's only insight or only understanding or only knowledge, it tends to be kind of dry, and it tends not to kind of be particularly inspiring. And it can actually kind of lead to kind of you in the wrong direction in your practice a little bit. And if you have too much faith and not enough understanding, not enough insight, then there can be blind faith. And there can be kind of giving your authority over to a system or to a tradition or to books or whatever. And there's no clear thinking, and it can be quite sentimental, one's engagement with the practice. And the idea being that these two have to be balanced together. So I wanted to talk a little bit about faith, try to talk about it this evening, because it's an important element of the practice. And kind of a footnote, I learned recently that the Sanskrit word for faith is Shraddha, kind of S-R-A-D-A. And it turns out in this wonderful way in which Indo-European languages connect, it actually has the same root as our word creed, because the C and the S are kind of like, you know, just a very simple change, and as they go through their you know, dialects and whatever. And so the C-R-E-D-E or C-R-E-E-D, so the word credible or credibility or creed is very closely connected, at least linguistically, with the word Shraddha, faith in Buddhism. However, a part of the reason I think some people are hesitant to use the word faith or a little bit allergic to it is its association in the West with a creed, that there, you have to believe in something, and a creed or some kind of belief in some doctrines. And if you don't believe in it, then you're not one of the chosen ones or the saved ones, or, you know, you got it wrong, or you're a heretic or something. And so sometimes when we talk about faith in Buddhism, people get a little bit nervous. You know, I don't want to have anything to do with that, anything that requires faith from me. However, perhaps I don't think that the word Shraddha should be translated as creed or belief. And I think some other translations in English are more appropriate. There are, in the ancient Buddhist texts, they give three words which kind of they consider to be synonyms, or two synonyms to the word Shraddha, to faith. And it's interesting these two words. And they are, so first there's faith. The second one is adimukti, which means something like, its meaning ranges from inclination to resolve. So something about faith that has to do with the way in which you incline your heart, the direction in which you incline your life. The resolve in which you kind of decide to live your life within, the vow, the intention of your life has to do with faith. And the third one, synonym, is the word for tranquility. And there's something that, about tranquility that makes tranquility, or something about faith that makes tranquility a synonym of faith. So these three things, faith, intention, and tranquility. Now the word faith, in and of itself, the Shraddha has another interesting linguistic story to tell. In the most ancient uses of the word, according to scholars of the Vedas, the ancient Indian Vedic texts, the Rig Vedas, for example, they claim that one of the original, earliest uses of the word, meanings of the word Shraddha in Indian languages, it meant hospitality. And I don't know, by the time, you know, a few thousand years later, the time you get to Buddhism, whether it's still, that meaning of it still lingered or perfumed the word. But I like it a lot. It works very well for those of us who do mindfulness practice. Because faith, an aspect of faith that has to be being a host or being hospitable to your experience. Not just simply being open to your experience, to allow it to happen, to be present for it, but a sense of being friendly to it as it arises. And there's a lot of very challenging things that happen to us in our life. And this, in the holiday season, is for some people a very stressful time. And how do we sit with a certain amount of hospitality, a certain amount of willingness to be present for the discomfort that can happen in our lives? So this idea of being hospitable, so there's a kind of faith that allows us, a kind of trust or kind of confidence that allows us to remain open or remain connected to the situation, even when it's very, very difficult, when it's very painful. And that's an element, I think, a very important function of faith, is to encourage us, to allow us, to give us the confidence to stay in communication, stay open. I know all too easy, in my own personal experience, how easy it is to shut down, to go into denial, to say, I don't want to deal with this, to turn away, to lash out, to get angry. All these things I've done today, by the way. So it isn't like, you know, some abstraction. You know, I'm just talking kind of abstractly here. I know from firsthand that it's all too easy to do this. Jack Kornfield said recently, he kind of joking, but I think it's a very pointed joke. In India, you know, Buddhism was sometimes considered an ascetic tradition of sorts. They had ascetic practices in Buddhism. There were 13 that you were allowed to do as a Buddhist monk, a nun. But the ascetic practice of American Buddhism is meetings. And all those feelings that I had today came up in meeting. I was an all day meeting with Buddhists. So it's all too easy, I know, to shut down in all the various ways, especially when we feel uncomfortable or feel threatened. And to be hospitable is to somehow find a way or willingness to allow, to be open to the discomfort. And it doesn't mean to be a pushover. It doesn't mean to give in to the situation. But it also doesn't mean necessarily to resist it. It doesn't work completely, but I'm a little bit fond of the kind of pun, I guess, that people say, well, it's very important to stand up for yourself. It's an alternative to standing up to yourself is sitting down for yourself. And sitting down for yourself is not acquiescing, not giving in, but it's not. But at the same time, you're not playing the game. So you simply, the Buddha said, you need two people to be in conflict. It's often said, this doesn't always work, but this is a very, I think, very important principle, is that you don't have to participate. You don't have to play the game if you don't want to. Now, a terrible example of this is what I did to my poor mother when I was a teenager. I learned at some point that when she got angry with me, I didn't have to participate in the game. So I would just smile. It just made her furious. But, you know, she lost her power over me. That day when I realized I could do that, she lost her power over me. And, you know, I'm sorry to say, but it's part of, you know, growing up. The things you have to learn. So there's ways of doing it which is disrespectful, not playing the game disrespectfully. But there's also ways of doing respectfully, sitting down. You know, I call it metaphorically sitting down for yourself rather than standing up for yourself. So to have the confidence, to have the trust that you're willing to kind of feel whatever's going on, be present for it, and not jump in, not react to it automatically, I think requires something that I call faith. And that kind of faith, that kind of faith is very important for meditation practice. Because if you're not willing to stay kind of open, not really knowing what's going to happen next, not with an agenda, not with an interpretation, not with a story, not with an expectation, then it's possible to kind of really allow oneself to let go into the meditation itself. But if you're doing a meditation practice and you start having expectations or start having judgments or start having agendas, they get in the way of what's going on. So it requires faith of a certain kind, or confidence or trust of a certain kind, to be willing to sit down in meditation and allow whatever is going to happen, and not make it anything to do with your own agenda. This thing about creed, one of the teachings of in the earliest strata of Buddhism, the earliest teachings of the Buddha, was very, very adamantly, the Buddha was very critical of attachment to speculative views, to speculations, to opinions. And you find over and over again in the oldest texts of Buddhism a tremendous emphasis on the danger and the suffering that's involved with clinging to opinions, to speculations, to views, to biases. And sometimes it's almost as if the earliest tradition of Buddhism, this was one of their main messages, was don't cling to views, don't cling to opinions, don't get attached to teachings. And one of the great quotes that in Buddhism, which Yvonne Rand says that we should have tattooed to the inside of our eyelids. is the following. So the Kalamas, some people in ancient India in a village, they asked the Buddha, there's a lot of different teachers around here. It's like a spiritual supermarket in ancient India, like nowadays in California. So they asked, how we see all these different people here coming around teaching their teaching. How can we decide which is the true teaching? And then, so the Buddha responds in this way. He says, it is fitting for you to be uncertain. It is fitting for you to be in doubt about all these different teachings that come your way. But you should decide not by what you have heard, not by following convention, not by assuming it is so, not by relying on texts, not because of reasoning, not because of logic, not by thinking about explanations, not by acquiescing to the views that you prefer, not because it appears likely, and certainly not out of respect for a teacher. Mm. What's left? So this is one of the great manifestos of Buddhism, is be very careful about where you invest authority for your beliefs, for what you believe is true and false. And the Buddha says, don't rely on texts, don't rely on your teachers, don't rely on tradition, don't rely on social conventions. Don't even rely on your own logic to figure out what's true or what's false. I think it's a very challenging teaching that he has. So the Buddha is actually very sensitive to creeds and how we adopt creeds. So the idea of faith in Buddhism, I think, is very clearly not in relationship to a creed, but has more to do with a state of being, a way of being. And what I'm proposing today, that part of it has to do with being hospitable, to be willing to receive, be present. The Zen mind, Suzuki Roshi, Zen mind, beginner's mind, has this word, beginner's mind. And I think it's a wonderful term to have a beginner's mind in all situations, a mind that doesn't automatically assume it knows everything, has the answer for everything, but is willing to take some time, have the faith or the confidence that you can kind of create some space, time space. Give a gap. Don't rush in with your opinions. Don't rush in with your reactions. But create some space and see, what will arise in this pause that I've created. To kind of the pregnant pause. To give ourselves lots of pregnant pauses to see what will arise. So that's one aspect of faith. It's being hospitable to our experience, friendly to ourselves in our experience. The other aspect of it is this adimukti, is the resolve or the intention, the inclination in a certain direction. Someone told me today that his son, who's maybe 12 or 13, invited his father to go for a walk, which they hadn't done for quite a couple of years, gone for a walk together. His son was into other things, And so he went for a walk with his son, and his son kind of started talking to him, to his father, and said, you know how it is sometimes? Sometimes it seems as if I'm just not here. And it seems like I'm just going through my life, and it just seems like everything's kind of like graceful. Things are happening, and I'm kind of taking care of things, but I'm not here. And his father, kind of was a Buddhist practitioner, said, oh. And his father said, yeah, I know what it's like. It's like, you know, that's why I do my meditation every day, so I can have that experience of kind of getting out of my way, not being here in this kind of self-centered way. And the son said, yeah, well, that's your way, but I don't want to make it happen. I want to just let it happen by itself when it happens. And then the father wanted to talk more about it. The father was kind of excited, you know, no self, you know, Buddhism. And after a while, the son said, please, I don't want to talk about it so much. Talking about it doesn't feel right. It happens to me 3 or 4 times a year, and it feels really, you know, really special. But let's not talk about it so much. Let's drop it. So that was a beautiful story. The father who told the rest of us, you can kind of sense, you know, the appreciation we had of the son, you know, having some kind of a different sense of being in the world that wasn't maybe as self-centered as he usually is, or so concerned about himself, his identity, or wasn't so clear. But for a 12, 13-year-old, I thought it was kind of significant. And there are, you know, different ways or modes of being in the world. There's ways of being in the world full of trust. There's ways of being in the world full of fear. There's ways of being in the world in conflict. There's ways of being in the world at peace with the world. And it's possible to feel inspired to incline or resolve one's life in the direction of more peace and less conflict, in the direction of more trust or less fear. And part of what faith is to have some sense of a possibility to live a little bit differently than the way we have been living that causes suffering to ourselves and others. And not to be attached to getting to some other place, not demanding it, not even expecting it, but to know that's a possibility and I'm going to incline myself in that direction. And this, for example, today was very important. You know, I have a tremendous amount of faith. And it, you know, it came to play at this meeting that I was at today because I was chairing the meeting. And part of what was discussed in the meeting was conflict between people. And everybody was involved. There's 14 people. Everybody somehow felt they had something very important to say and felt personally kind of moved by this conflict. And I, in the middle of it, I had my feelings about the conflict, but I was chairing. I wasn't chairing it, I was zafoing it. Zafoing. I was the zafu of the meeting. And those of you who don't know what a zafu is one of these round cushions we sit on in meditation. And it was very difficult for me to chair it and have my feelings and process them enough to stay kind of, you know, stay receptive and hospitable and kind of monitor what was going on. And one of the things that was very helpful for me was the faith that I have that there is a possibility of, at least for me, to remain hospitable, not to get caught up in my reactions, to remain kind of not in conflict, just to just breathe deeply and allow the situation some space to pause and see what might arise, rather than rushing in with, you know, rushing in on top of my feelings and my emotions. And there were times in the meeting where I took refuge in that faith. It wasn't like I could necessarily stop my sense of conflict inside of me, but I knew that was a possibility, and I was inspired. It was helpful for me because I was inspired by the possibility that I could be there without conflict. And that inspired me enough that I kind of, it gave me kind of, I don't know, joy is the right word, but kind of inspiration in my task to chair the meeting. I didn't do very well, I would say, but it still was inspiring and very helpful for me to have that faith of that possibility. And it was something I've tasted before, something I know, and I had some sense of how to go there, how to lean into that, how to go in that direction. So that's part of faith, is to have that sense of possibility, and then in a very skillful way, to kind of lean oneself or resolve oneself in that direction. And then the third, the last synonym for faith is tranquility. And So the idea of faith in Buddhism is not this fervent, what is the word? Fervent faith. It's not blind faith. It's not, you know, it doesn't have all this, you know, power that you want to go out and convert everyone or tell all your friends. Or there's a tranquil feeling to to the aspect of faith and the way the Buddha talked about it. It brings a sense of tranquility to a person. The faith of a possibility of peace, the possibility of living in peace. The faith of hospitality, of being receptive and willing to be present for the difficulties in life. That kind of willingness has hopefully a sense of tranquility to it. People who come in contact with you maybe feel that you're not imposing yourself on them. You don't have an agenda. You're not ready to attack them. You're there. There's some pause there. You're willing to wait and listen and hear what's going on here. So there's kind of tranquil feeling that kind of comes to that kind of faith. Perhaps a lot of the fervor that can be around faith arises out of attachment, out of clinging. It arises out of our sense of how a teaching or how a doctrine or religion or an opinion feeds our ego or feeds our identity. So if you have the best opinion on the block, it's very important to everybody on your block hear your opinion, because it shows what a great person you are. You know, some variety of like that, right? I think a lot of times when we rush in with our opinion, it's not so much our opinion that's rushing in, but our sense of our ego coming in and saying, look, this is my opinion, and everybody just better stop listening to me. This is my religion. This is really great. And it feeds insecure egos to have the best doctrine on the block. Because then you're insecure, you have something which is better than yourself, and you latch on to that to show that now you have something really great and wonderful. So perhaps Buddhist practitioners, who are really, one of the things Buddhist practitioners do is they study the ways in which we entangle our ego, entangle our self-identity with different aspects of the world. Say, this is me and mine. This is my opinion. This is my view. This is my religion. And we study how we entangle that so we can free ourselves from any entanglements of ego entirely. Like this young boy, 12, 13-year-old, who felt sometimes he wasn't there. But he was quite happy. Things were happening really wonderful for him. So a sense of so it has a kind of tranquility, the Buddhist faith. It doesn't have that fervor, because there's nothing at stake. The Buddhist faith doesn't do anything for you, for the ego, right? It's not supposed to, if you're doing the practice. So it's a very strange religion. The faith is not supposed to do anything for you, at least for your ego. Also, what's about Buddhism, because Buddhist practice forces us sooner or later to really question the way in which we identify with things, the ways in which we take labels onto ourselves. Sooner or later, one of the things Buddhist practitioners will question is the very label of being a Buddhist. So Buddhist practitioners, after a while, you know, for a while you're not a Buddhist, it's fine, who needs it? And then you discover it, you think it's really great, and then you're a Buddhist. But then you keep practicing, after a while you realize, who needs it? So there's a way in which Buddhism self-destructs for you. And as it self-destructs, your faith increases in Buddhism. Yes, Rainbow. It's hard to know the appropriate definitions for things, but if we pick it on a kind of spectrum, on one end of the spectrum is blind belief. Because for some people, belief and faith seem closely connected. So then the other end perhaps of the spectrum maybe is confidence. And I would say trust, for me, tends to be closer to the confidence side of the spectrum than the blind belief side. But it depends what you have your trust in. Right? So
is one time that when you started this discussion, you said at the beginning there's
creed,
the blind faith,
yeah.
And on the other side is knowledge faith, but that can be dry if it's not also.
Well, that's a different spectrum.
Okay.
And So the trust is for me is a very important word, but it's not so much a trust in something like a belief system or an idea, as it is a trust in a potential. That I have the potential to be mindful of in the situation, to pay attention. I have the potential to be receptive. I have the potential to really take care of the situation well, not to cling, not to get attached, not to get aggressive. I have that as a potential, and that's I have faith and trust and confidence that in that potential, and that's very important because then it inspires me then to try to lean in that direction, to live my life that way somewhat. So I think it's more of, for me personally, it's more of trust in a potential and a possibility than it is in a belief system. Well, I'm inspired myself by the possibility that I know to live without conflict, and my motivation comes from my inspiration. However, the inspiration is not confused with expectation, or with an agenda, or with a demand, or with a judgment. So that's why we'd say in Buddhism, sometimes we lean ourselves in a certain direction we want to go. We incline ourselves to Nibbana. And that inclination, you can be inspired in that inclination, moving in that direction. But if you usually have an expectation that this is going to happen tomorrow or today, the danger with an expectation is that we'll get disappointed. And it causes more suffering. So, and since we're interested in somehow helping us alleviate suffering, we don't want to get stuck in the trap of expectation. Expectation is to have an aspiration and be clinging to it. What we're trying to do is to have an inclination, have a certain direction we want to go in our life, and be inspired to go in that direction, but without any kind of way clinging to it in all the ways we can cling. And expectation, for me, is another kind of clinging. And what we're trying to find in Buddhist practice is how to live a life which is neither optimistic or pessimistic. It doesn't belong to that game.
So it almost seems like I could spend my whole life just trying to sit without.
It's a challenge. So that's my talk on faith. I hope that some of my faith kind of... one of the things I have faith in the most, I didn't mention this, I was going to talk about it, was I have a lot of faith in the practice of mindfulness. And so I don't have faith in a teaching, but I have faith in the process of bringing our attention carefully to our lives. And that I think it's transformational. It's very important. It's very powerful, and it's tremendously useful to free ourselves, to see clearly what's going on, and it involves us in a process. The practice itself involves us in a process which is healing. So I don't know when the healing or when the completion happens, but I trust the process of practice of mindfulness of honesty, and so often what I do is I entrust myself to the practice, to the mindfulness, in situations where I don't, you know, things are difficult for me, I don't know where the outcome is going to be. But I entrust myself to the practice, and I trust that the practice somehow will help find the way forward in a situation. I don't rely on my own abilities to think it out, or my knowledge, or what I've learned in the past. But I rely on the process of clarification, the process of bringing mindfulness to the situation. And that's where a lot of my trust lies. And then we talk sometimes about verified faith. And verified faith is a kind of when you've practiced for a while and you have some direct experience for yourself of how it's actually possible and maybe reasonable to trust the practice, to trust mindfulness, and that then it becomes verified for yourself. You know for yourself. Anyway, I hope that whatever tranquil, non-clinging, creedless faith that you might have has gotten strengthened this evening. Thank you all.